And now, talking to the boyhood heroes who became his broadcasting colleagues, this is My Radio 1 with Sean
Tilly. From its launch in 1967 right through the 70s to the mid-80s, BBC Radio 1 was probably the world's biggest music station. In this series, I'm introducing you to many of the people behind the network's success during those golden years as they each tell the story of their Radio 1. Sean
Tilly. My Radio 1.
Whispers, my girl. It's 24 minutes past 2 o'clock. Radio 1. 4:30 this afternoon, Richard Skinner takes to the airwaves. He'll be taking you through till a quarter to 6 this evening. And then it's Roundtable, hosted, as always, by Paul Gambaccini, with guest disc jockey tonight, Tommy Vance. National Radio 1. 7:30 this evening, Annie After Dark on a Friday, even if it is a beautiful summer's evening. You've got a friend, the happy sound of Radio 1. Tonight at 10 o'clock, Tommy Vance with the Friday Rock Show featuring music from Pink Floyd.
Always good to welcome a friend, but in the case of this man, one of the network's most versatile broadcasters of all time.
Thanks, Sean. Very good to be here.
13 years, was it, or 14 all told?
No, I was 13. Started in the end of 78 and finished in the spring of 1992.
We're obviously looking at the golden years of the network. So really, talking about the period that you had for the first 7 years of that. But let's go way back even further. When you were actually listening to the radio and thinking, you know, I wouldn't mind doing that for a living. Who were your broadcasting heroes in those days?
Well, I grew up with radio, so Sunday lunchtime in our house was the Light Programme, and you were talking about the Billy Cotton Band Show and Navy Lark, Round the Horn with Kenneth Horne and Kenneth Williams. So these were the voices, and then of course that transcribed itself into listening to Pick of the Pops or the Top 40, whatever it was called in the 60s, with David Jacobson, Alan Freeman and those early presenters. And then I fell in love with pirate radio, and irony of ironies, I'm at home in Bishop Stortford in Hertfordshire, where I first got involved with radio on the local hospital radio station. I played in the records. Somebody you'll know, Ian Damon, who was on Capital Radio and late in the history of Radio London. Ian was one of the jocks, and I thought, hey, this is good, I like this. Anyway, one day a removal van pulled up outside our home, and a man with a beard came down the drive and put his hand out and said, hello, do you live here? And I said, yes, we live on the ground floor. Are you moving into the flat above? He said, yeah, my name's Paul. I said, oh, really? What do you do for a living, Paul? He said, well, I'm the chief newscaster on Radio London, the pirate station. And I looked at him. I remember my chin must have hit the floor. And I went, what, Paul Kay? Mm. And he said, yes, the very same. How nice. I said, I listen to you. You're on at 9 o'clock every night on Radio London before John Peel comes on with the Perfumed Garden. And he looked at me and he went, wow. And that bonded us. And he became a big inspiration. He was a very fine broadcaster. Unfortunately, alcohol got the better of him. And in the end, he died tragically young. Because of his problems.
And now, Radio London presents their final hour.
You're hearing things.
You're hearing things.
On wonderful Radio London.
Yes, thank you, Paul, and a very good afternoon to you all. Ed Stewart here with Myrtle. Hello, Myrtle.
Hello, Dale.
And Paul, well, we've got fun for the next hour, haven't we?
Yes, indeed, and we're not alone with Myrtle because we also have Cliff Richard.
Many thanks for all the plugs in the past, and thanks for being so nice about our records. Hope and wish you all the very best for the future, staff and DJs, and whatever you do.
On Saturday the 30th of September 1967, I had just started at Bournemouth College of Technology on the four-year hotel management course. I had aspirations of running the Savoy in London or the Carlton in Bournemouth or whatever. My mother was very pleased. This was good. This was a proper job. And on that Saturday morning at 7 o'clock, we all know what happened. The boy from Bournemouth, the other boy from Bournemouth, Anthony Blackburn Esquire, opened Radio 1. he was a hero instantly because he was brilliant, and on that morning, produced as he was by Johnny Beerling, sitting about as far away from him as you are from me now, we created history in this country. Now, if you'd said to me on that day, you will eventually work for Radio 1, you will become a good friend of Tony's, you will enjoy 13 years working for that network, I would have laughed. But it just so happened that later that term, the catering department at Bournemouth College asked me to organise a dance. And I booked a local nightclub, Samantha's, on Pool Hill in Bournemouth. And I arrogantly said to the manager, a guy called Phil Jost, we'll book the club, we'll pay you the £20 or £25. And you've told me that includes all the staff. I don't want a disc jockey. I remember Phil looking at me very quizzically. He said, why not? Are you going to stand around and talk to each other all night? I said, no, if it's okay with you, I'll DJ. And he said, have you done it before? And I've got to be honest, Sean, I told him half a lie, because I had DJed at school at a dance for the hockey festival at my school, Bishop Stortford College. So I said, yeah, I have. And I'm thrilled to tell you, but at the end of the evening, he walked up to me. He was quite a character. And he said, well, he said, you probably didn't realise that was an audition. And I landed up working there every night we were open. My mother was absolutely horrified. She'd worked at the Bank of England all her life. And she just couldn't understand. And to make matters worse, I then announced to her that I'm leaving after the first year of four. And I'm going to become a full-time DJ.
This is Radio Manchester. Radio Manchester.
I went to work at BBC Manchester. I was trained by Sandra Chalmers, Judy's sister. She sat me down with a couple of pieces of A4.
It's the capital station of the North.
And she said, I want you to read this, but I want you to finish when the second hand hits the top of the clock. So I started reading, and I suddenly realised that there wasn't enough copy.
Programmes designed for every age. There'll be music from the hit parade, the cinema and stage. Lots of news and opinions, topical and witty, all from Piccadilly Gardens in the heart of the city.
And I was getting slower and slower. And she gave me the next one, and I had to read it like this because there were so many words that I wasn't going to get them in. And eventually we started getting it right.
This is Radio Manchester.
I will never, ever be able to thank her enough, because once you can do that in radio without fear and do it with confidence, it makes the job that we do, certainly I did at Radio 1, a lot more enjoyable and a lot easier.
On 261 and Stereo 97, this is Piccadilly Radio.
I then rather naughtily took up a job offer at Piccadilly Radio, the new commercial radio station in Manchester, which opened on the 2nd of April 1974. Philip Birch was so superstitious that he refused to open on the 1st. So we opened on a Tuesday, and there I was working for Paul Kay's old boss.
Andy Peeble.
More coverage of the second test at Old Trafford with Matt Proctor. The tea interval will be over in about 5 minutes. We'll be going over to Matt in about 10 minutes from now. And in 5 minutes from now, you can win that double album by Steve Harley and Cockney Rebel. But how about a brand new single from Denise Williams?
Right, so you were happily beavering away at Piccadilly Radio for 4 years. And then in 1978, the big one came calling. How did you first learn about Radio 1's interest?
I got a phone call from Tony Hale, who was Radio 1's chief producer in Manchester. He ran the Manchester office. And he said, I don't quite know how to word this, and I've got to be careful, because I don't want you to think that anything I'm about to say constitutes an offer. But he said, Johnny Beerling would like to take you out for dinner. Where would you like to go? And I said, are you serious? He said, yeah. And at the end of it, Johnny said, look, Andy, again, I have to reiterate, this is not an offer, but I think you would surmise from the fact that I'm here that we are pretty keen on the idea of you working for us. And I think I can say with some confidence that you will be hearing from Derek Chinnery very soon, which within a few weeks I had. Beverly Pond, Derek's wonderful secretary, phoned me up and said, Derek and Doreen would like to invite you for lunch in London. And Derek said, right, I'm hiring you because I want you to bridge the gap between close down at 7 o'clock or 7.30 and John Peel coming back at 10 o'clock. He said, probably rock music, album tracks, I'm going to put you with Jeff Griffin, who we think is spot on to produce this programme, and we'll leave it to you.
And at 4 o'clock, this is Paddy O'Byrne at the Radio News Desk. The BBC radio strike, called by the Association of Broadcasting Staffs, was due to begin a few seconds ago.
And I arrived, and I remember coming into the office, which is probably a good cricket ball's throw from where we're sitting, in the old Egdon House building, and Derek asked to see me, and I thought, first day, and the boss is demanding to see me. Beverly Pond said, it's very urgent, you need to come up and see Derek. So I went up to see him. And he said, I'm afraid I've got bad news, Andy, for you and for me. And I said, sorry, Derek, I don't know what you're talking about. He said, well, the bad news for you is that the London Control Room are refusing to man your programme. In other words, they won't let you into the studio or let you broadcast until we have resolved a rather tricky situation involving manpower.
The union, which has called a strike in the BBC due to begin in an hour's time, says progress has been made in today's talks at the London offices of the conciliation service ACAS. BBC management representatives are also there.
Actually, now looking back, they were quite right, because I think BBC management rather arrogantly just assumed that another 2.5-3 hours on the BBC day didn't need any particular attention. They obviously begged to differ. So I said to Derek, right, that's not good news. He said, no, it's not. I'm hoping it'll be resolved as soon as possible. The bad news for me, he said, is good news for you, because you've signed a contract and I'm going to have to pay you. And obviously Derek was very benevolent and found, not excuses, but reasons to put me on air. I have vivid memories of being on air. Was it Christmas Day in 1970?
Christmas Day 78. We can hear that right now, in fact.
National Radio 1.
Good afternoon to you and a very, very happy Christmas. These are your lessees, Billy and Bobby, who come from New York City. One of my favourite songs from the last year.
The Groove Line from Heatwave is the last record to be played on Radio 1 in the year 1978. Stand by for a brand new year on Radio 1 and a record from the group who could be considered to have been the most successful of 1978. This is Andy Peebles in London for Radio 1 in 1978.
I was given the enjoyable task of taking Radio 1 out of 1978 and into 1979.
And may I be the first to wish you a very, very happy new year. 1979 is here, but in 1978 it had to be the year of the Bee Gees.
And then, on the first Sunday in 1979, you sat in on Europe's biggest radio show for the very first time, the legendary Top 40, which must have been a huge thrill for you.
Well, it was a great honour and a great privilege, and also a great joy to work with the late Bernie Andrews, who had been the producer on Saturday Club when the Beatles started their career for the BBC. He and my producer, Jeff Griffin, were best mates, and Bernie always wore jeans and a jean jacket. And the first question in 1980 from John Lennon to me in the Hit Factory recording studio was, A, said, how's my mate? And I said, and that would be, oh God, he said, I'm trying to remember his name. He said, you know the fellow, always wore a jean jacket. And I said, you mean Bernie Andrews? Bernie Andrews, he said, that's it. How are you, Bernie?
It's the very first chart of 1979 on Radio 1. I'm Andy Peebles, sitting in for Simon Bates, and welcome along. Mankind at number 26, and it's down from number 22 to...
number 25.
For the Dots.
And it all went quite well in the first hour. And as you'll remember, Sean, in the first hour, it was being broadcast to Radio 1. In the second hour, after the Greenwich Time Signal, the Pips, at 6 o'clock, it was broadcast on both Radio 1 and Radio 2. And I noticed as the GTS started to go and my finger hit, we used to have this little three-button box for the cart machines, and I put my finger down on the one I was going to play next, and I could see Bernie frantically scribbling on a piece of A4. And as I looked up, Bernie is like this, holding up this piece of A4 in front of me, on which he'd written, "It may interest you to know, darling, that at this time last week, 24.75 million people were listening to this programme."
Boy Child from Boney M. And before the number one, here's a rundown for you of this week's brand new Top 20, the very first of 1979. At number 20, Promises from the Buzzcocks. At number 19, Tommy Gunn and The Clash. At 18, the music of Earth, Wind & Fire and September. At number 17, Musique and In the Bush. At number 16, Hot Chocolate and I'll Put You Together Again. 15, we find Chaka Khan and I'm Every Woman. At 14, Dollar and Shooting Star. 13, Grease Lightning from John Travolta. Number 12, from Heatwave and Always and Forever. Number 11, Rod Stewart, Do You Think I'm Sexy. At 10, Chic and La Freak. Number 9, Sarah Brightman and Hot Gossip and I Lost My Heart to a Starship Trooper. At 8, the Bee Gees and Too Much Heaven. Number 7, Barbara Streisand and Neil Diamond duetting on You Don't Bring Me Flowers. 6, Injury in the Blockheads, Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick. At number 5, Elton John and Song for Guy. At number 4, The Baron Knights and A Taste of Aggro. At number 3, Lay Your Love on Me from Racy. And at number 2, Mary's Boy Child from Boney M. And now here it is, the first number 1 of 1979. YMCA and the Village People are number one.
In order to fulfill your agreement with Radio 1, there was a makeshift drive time slot to plug into for a few weeks before officially starting the evening show. But then, in September 1979, a certain on-air rant from Mr. Blackburn resulted in you getting promoted to weekday afternoons.
In principle, I could understand why Tony was so upset that the Daily Telegraph's radio correspondent, the esteemed Gillian Reynolds, decided to have a go about the fact that Tony was talking about the breakup of his marriage, in Gillian's opinion, too often, on air. And unfortunately, on that Monday afternoon, just after 2 o'clock, he came on air for his afternoon show and he launched into Gillian. And I remember I was lying in the bath and I kept saying, "Tony, shut up, play a record. Tony, for goodness sake, shut up, play a record." And it went on for minutes. I mean, I hope you'll forgive me for telling the story, but it's true. And I knew that he was going to be in serious trouble. And about 2 hours later, my phone rang in North London, and it was Beverly Pond. And she said, "Andy, Derek says, could you come and see him first thing tomorrow morning? And he's also asked me to tell you that it's not bad news, you're not in trouble, but he needs to talk to you." So I went in, and I walked in, and Derek said to me, "This is probably going to come as a big shock." And I thought, oh my God, what's he going to say? And he said, "I want to take you off the evening programme and put you on the afternoon show."
Good afternoon to you. An all-time top 10 chosen for us this afternoon by Sally Coates, who comes from Birmingham 29. You're right, our kid. Nick Straker and his band and A Walk in the Park. Good idea on a day like this. And if you're taking your transistor to listen to Richard Skinner, don't turn it up too loud, will you? Have a great weekend. I'll see you tomorrow afternoon for Rock on Saturday. It's 4:30 on a Friday afternoon. And with the Newsbeat headlines, we join Peter Main.
Tony was great about it, but obviously heartbroken because it took him off the afternoons. And really, it changed his career at Radio 1, or it started to. And I was the lucky so-and-so who took over the afternoon show, which was prestigious. And I worked with Paul Williams, as producer, and it exploded. I mean, I was given a program on BBC World Service, an album review program. I had a lovely phone call from British Forces Radio saying, will you come and do a weekly program for us? And I was off and running.
At number four on the chart this week, Michael Jackson, and Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. And here to dance to it, Legs and Co.
The only problem was Doreen Davis phoning me and saying, Robin Nash has called me and they want you to do Top of the Pops.
And yeah, that was not a comfortable fit for you.
No,
you've always been very open about that.
It wasn't, Sean, that I didn't like doing it. I did. I got a buzz out of it professionally. What I didn't like about it was that I just didn't understand why they needed disc jockeys to introduce it. I mean, it would have made much more sense to have given the late Tommy Vance, one of my friends and heroes, a full-time job as the voiceover. And I said to Robin Nash, if you did that, you'd get another record in. You might even get two, instead of having us standing there inanely for 15 or 10 seconds, counting down the next record. And Robin said to me, you're trying to destroy your own career. And I said, no, I'm not. I'm putting it to you.
Jamming, taking us out on a Friday. So you've got Bourbonnais coming up at 12:45 in 15 minutes time, through till 2:30, then it's Simon, 3:30 this afternoon, Peter Powell. Have a great weekend. I'll see you Monday morning at 10:30. It's now 12:30 and here's Frank Partridge.
It was in 1980 when you vacated the afternoon show and moved to the morning programme for a while, and it was also the year that first saw you hosting the legendary Radio 1 Roadshow. What are your memories of that?
The first year I did it was Wales. I think we went Barry Island, 10B,
Porthcawl,
Barmouth, and up to near Port Merion.
Aberystwyth,
yeah. I caught the train, I think from Llandudno, and the waiter in the restaurant car, because I was starving, having done the programme, was a Scouser. And he came up and he said, right, do you know what you want? And I said, yeah, can I have the mixed grill, please, because I'm starving. And he said, right. He said, do you like cabaret? So I said, what sort of cabaret? He said, wait till I ask this lot what they want. And he turned around and he said, right, make it easy for me. You can either point at the menu or write it down. And they were North Walian Welsh speakers who refused to speak English. That was the first year. The second year, I remember we started in Great Yarmouth. And Johnny gets all the credit here because he started the radio career of Lenny Henry. Lenny was invited. I found a photo the other day. I'm thrilled I've got it. Of Len and I. Lenny was invited by Johnny, because he was appearing in Great Yarmouth for the summer season, to come and do the show. And he just, I mean, I just walked backwards. I thought, right, you're not on the same planet as this fella. He is hilarious.
The Radio 1 Roadshow.
Today, live from the St. Nicholas Recreation Ground, Great Yarmouth, with Andy Peebles and special guest Lenny Henry.
Junior, the other woman, a slight change of style, and I think very much for the better. What is this, round table? No, it's not. I'm not reviewing the records. I'm just playing them. It's 7.5 minutes past 7 o'clock. Good evening to you. Before that, and to open tonight's programme, from 1970, at least that's what it says on the record, Pacific Gas and Electric with the Blackberries. You remember that song, Are You Ready? Good to play that again. It came out on CBS Records 12 years ago. So, on the show tonight, well, action-packed as ever. Thrilled a bit to have Peter Shilton joining us at around about, I would have thought, 20 to 9. He'll be up in our studio in Nottingham, and we will be chatting about his immensely successful career in soccer. He's got a book out at the moment. That isn't, I hastily add, the total reason why he's on the programme. No, this is not the Michael Parkinson Show. Homo sapien, they're giving it another push, as we say in the trade. It's Peter Shelley, one-time brains behind the Buzzcocks, and that is his single release at the moment. 12 minutes past 7 o'clock. On the sporting front, a bit of news come through today from the BBC Sports Department that Sharon Davis is thinking about taking up swimming again seriously, and hopefully later in the programme, a few words from the lovely lady herself explaining her reasons. We have piles of good music, including a session tonight from four gentlemen who I got on with very well last night in Yorkshire. Strange, you're thinking to yourself. Well, we're all up in Harrogate, you see. I'll tell you a little bit more about it later in the programme. programme, but they are Talk Talk.
Yes, nice little clip there of the Friday night programme, because eventually you were given the chance to combine your two great passions in life by interviewing famous names from the world of sport and playing their favourite songs on programmes like My Top 12, although you did used to have pop stars and actors on and what have you, but especially that Friday night programme, Andy, which saw you team up with producer Jeff Griffin again. And once more, it was Derek Chinnery that you have to thank for that.
Derek was a great supporter of my sporting stuff. It was he who instituted the Friday night programme. I think he loved it a little more than Johnny did. Johnny took it off. And understandably so, nothing lasts forever. And Johnny was absolutely brilliant with me right through the 13 years. And it fell to Johnny to call me in on a Monday morning and tell me the party was over. And he treated me very graciously. And as you know, we are still great friends.
Being at Radio 1 as you were during this period that we cover in this series, it saw you lining up alongside the all-time greats, the creme de la creme of music radio broadcasting. Now, I know that you look back on each and every one of the guys with positive vibes and thoughts, but it's Noel Edmonds in particular that you've got happy memories of working alongside.
I had a great relationship with Noel. We just constantly took the mickey out of each other. We did an outside broadcast at Cheddar Gorge during our week out in Bristol, obviously on a Sunday morning, and he asked me not to co-host the programme, but just to be there for somebody to bounce off. Malcolm Brown, I think it was, who was the producer at that stage, had booked the Wells Cathedral Choir to come and sing. I mean, a fantastic idea. And down in this cave, you can imagine...
The acoustics would have been wonderful.
They were just brilliant. And the BBC's quite superb sound engineers had been in and done all the necessary microphone placing and testing. I'll never forget it. I don't know why I did this, but they did their first piece and Noel said, "Andy Peebles, got to come to you." And I said, "Really? Why?" He said, "Well, I've been doing some research." He said, "How long did you sing in church choirs?" I said, 16 years, man and boy. "Really?" he said. Why did you finish?" I said, "The vicar told me I was surplus to requirements." And Noel got it straight away and fell about laughing. And he said to me afterwards, "That's you and me. That's it. That's my sense of humour. That's your sense of humour."
Well, it's Radio 1 on a Sunday, and my programme is very much kicking off our week around the Bristol area. And, well, I've been fairly flippant about the fact that I'm down Wookie Hole, because, well, you can't take a radio programme from underground seriously, really, can you? But just imagine that you're in a huge cave, and there is a river which actually forms here in the Mendips flowing through. It flows very fast, so I'm told, and it's very deep at this particular point. It's a very small sort of shore by the side of the river, not much bigger than sort of 15 yards by about 10 yards. And standing there are the Wells Cathedral School Choir. Who's making that unruly noise? Oh, it's Peebles. Hello. You said you didn't ever want to come back down here. You're here again.
I've just got the equipment in. I think we're all right.
Okay, now... I want orchestral manoeuvres. Can you find that one for
Certainly,
me?
Certainly, yes. Right. I'll manoeuvre my orchestral.
I want the new one.
The new one?
Joan of Arc.
Oh, yes.
Right. Ah, there it is. Jolly.
Good morning to you. I'm Andy Peebles. I wish I could say that I was delighted to be with you for the next hour. In a way I am, because it's nice to be back in Britain after what I had hoped would be an ecstatically enjoyable weekend in America and in New York. As you know, you've all heard the news about the very sad death of John Lennon. And we are going to play you excerpts, and I stress very strongly, some small excerpts from an interview which I did with John Lennon on Saturday night at a recording studio in New York. We talked for over 3 hours, and when I arrived at 5:50 on Saturday evening, New York time, to meet John Lennon personally for the first time, I found a man who seemed extremely happy with life. Excerpts from that interview and music too from John Lennon.
Obviously, doing a program with you about Radio 1, we have to talk about that interview. And does it remain the most pivotal moment of your long and extensive and hugely successful broadcasting career?
Well, I'm glad we've left it till the end, and I'm glad we've put a time limit on it, because there are times when, I'll be honest with you, I actually think to myself, do I really want to talk about this again? The answer to you as a friend is yes. It's one of the great moments of anyone's career, I think. He hadn't talked to anybody on the radio for 10 years, and suddenly here I am in New York in December 1980, and I'm talking to him for 3 hours and 18 minutes. Longest interview I've ever done with anyone. Thank you, John. And then we go out for dinner, and then on the Monday night we leave Kennedy at 7 o'clock at night, and at 10:45, Mark Chapman pulls the trigger, and we're halfway across the pond. We had no idea, didn't know till we got back. I mean, I've recounted this story on so many occasions. The real nub of this, Sean, is that it gave me the opportunity to meet my favourite Beatle. It gave me the opportunity to talk about our pop group at school. Our lead singer was a wonderful guy called Nick Clark, who hosted The World at One on Radio 4 for years. And I'm sitting there in Mr. Chow's, and John's saying to me, "Which of our songs did you do then, Andrew?" And I told him. And he was genuinely interested and fascinated. "Why did you do that?" I said, "Well, Malcolm MacArthur, our guitarist, found the chord sequence fascinating and eventually he worked it out. But I said, I think you and George had changed some of the fingerings for the chords." He said, "Yeah, dead right." He said, "Well done." And it was just little things like that, and, you know, chatting to him about his time in America. I think he was very homesick. And he genuinely told me that he would come to England probably in February. And he had the audacity to say to me, "Would it be all right if I bought a guitar and came in on your programme?" And I said, "John, that's the most stupid question I've ever been asked by anybody.
I can go right out this door now and go in a restaurant. Do you want to know how great that is? Or go to the movies. I mean, people will come up and ask for autograph or say hi, but they won't bug you, you know?"
Andy, it's always a delight. Always good to see you. And thank you so much for sharing with me and the listeners to this programme, your Radio 1.
The greatest years of my life, 13 of them. Wonderful.